I know a number of people who say as they meditate the wild swings of mood that they used to have get less extreme. The downs aren't quite so down, but the ups aren't very up. Everything becomes gray and equanimous. That's not the path the Buddha described. He does talk about equanimity. That's the closest he gets to talking about acceptance, accepting things as they are. But equanimity is never taught on its own. And the lists of qualities that lead up to equanimity always contain something having to do with joy, pleasure, happiness. In other words, when the Buddha is talking about equanimity, it's the equanimity of someone who has found joy in the practice and has a sense of fullness, and then can be equanimous about things because of that fullness, because of that joy. So if you found that your practice is becoming gray oatmeal, ask yourself what you can do to make it more flavorful. One of the customs of the noble ones is to delight in developing and to delight in letting go. You have to find joy in the practice, because there are a lot of things you have to give up. Other customs of the noble ones have to do with being content with the food you get, content with the clothing you have, content with your lodgings. If it's good enough to practice, it's good enough. You don't have to go way out of your way to make things special. But you're not content with states of the mind that are less than satisfactory. In fact, the Buddha said that was the secret to his awakening, not being content even with skillful qualities. If it hadn't gone all the way, there's more work to be done. Okay, he would do it. He would find ways to delight in it as well. Even when he talks about the different levels of equanimity, he always recommends that you find some way of taking joy first. Then settle into a higher level of equanimity. And this is one of the reasons why the practice begins with generosity and virtue. When the Buddha would explain the Four Noble Truths, he was explaining it to lay people who'd really jump right into the Four Truths. He started out with what was called a graduated discourse, or step-by-step discourse. And the first two topics were generosity and virtue. Notice he didn't start with abstractions. He started with activities that people were already familiar with, and activities that people realize are good. He's pointing out how they can make you happy. The act of generosity in and of itself is a happy act. You have more than enough to share. Generosity here means, of course, voluntary generosity. Not the type where you're forced to give a present because it's Christmas or a birthday or something, but simply out of the goodness of your heart, you want to share, and you have more than enough. Sometimes you may have very little, but the attitude that wants to share turns it into more than enough, and there's a happiness in that. The mind becomes more spacious. Same with the precepts. The fact that you're able to abstain from low behavior. You're not so poor and hungry and desperate that you have to grub around for what you want out of life. You're in a position where you can step back and say, no, that kind of behavior is beneath me. And even though it may involve some sacrifices, the fact that you're able to maintain your honor is a happy act. So when the Buddha's starting out, before he gets to the Four Noble Truths, he's establishing that our activities are important. Other teachers of his time would talk about the universe, talk about the elements of the universe, whether they would make action meaningful or meaningless. Usually they would talk about your actions as being meaningless. There were the Brahmins and the Jains who talked about action being meaningful, but for them it was, in the case of the Brahmins, it was ritual action. In the case of the Jains, all action was productive of suffering. To get beyond suffering, you have to just stop acting. But everybody else would talk about the universe as a whole, principles of the world, whether the world is eternal or not eternal, or who made it and what intention that maker had, that kind of thing. But when the Buddha was talking to people, he would talk about activities that they were familiar with and that they knew were good. And if the happiness that you get out of those activities is something to be cherished, something to be cultivated. Not only were those actions good in and of themselves, but they gave good results. Happiness on into the future. But then you would point out that that happiness had its limitations. You would talk about the degradation of sensuality, the drawbacks of sensuality, because usually sensual pleasures were the results of being generous and being virtuous. He said even heavenly sensual pleasures have their drawbacks. This way he's starting out with something good that people are familiar with, and he's taking them to a place they may not be familiar with. The idea that maybe it would be good to go beyond sensuality. And then he would talk about the pleasures of jhana. As you would explain the Four Noble Truths, we read the truths and it's all about suffering, 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 suffering. But it's not just suffering, it's trying to find out the cause. Realize it's possible for suffering to end, and there's a path of practice, things you can do. Again, he's taking that principle, your actions can make a difference, and it can make a big difference. This in itself is a happy thought, because if you're suffering can be ended only by things that other people do, or simply wear itself out on its own, that makes you powerless. Here the Buddha is saying, you have power in your actions. That thought is a happy thought. And one of the important actions that you're going to need to develop is learning how to get the mind still, concentrated, in right concentration. And the stages of right concentration are defined by their feeling tone. First one is pleasure and rapture, born of seclusion, accompanied by direct thought and evaluation. Then the pleasures get more intense for a while in the second and third jhana, and then finally, when you've had enough, that's when you develop equanimity in the fourth jhana. And it's equanimity that comes when there's a sense of satisfaction. So you're not forcing yourself to say, well, I just have to accept things as they are because there's no other way they're going to be. One, that's not what the Buddha taught, and two, it's a depressing thought. The Buddha says you don't just accept things as they are. You figure out what you can change so you can follow that path to the end of suffering. And it does involve happiness. So if your practice is getting dry, remind yourself it's meant to provide you with delight. So what can you do that's in line with the Dharma that would provide delight? Learn how to think positively about the goodness that comes with being generous and virtuous, getting the mind still, having some control over your thoughts, and then seeing the things that have eluded you for a long time. That's what discernment is all about. We all want happiness. Everything we do is for the sake of happiness, and yet so often our actions lead to the opposite. There's something we're missing. There's something we're not seeing. The whole purpose of discernment is to see clearly where we're making our mistake so we can correct that mistake. So the path involves changing a lot of things, simply that the focus is on changing your actions. We look after the monastery, we look after our environment, because that's a part of contentment, taking good care of what you've got. You learn how to get by with little, and one of the best ways of getting by with little is to learn how to use what you've got in a way that makes it last, looking after it, taking care of it. So contentment doesn't mean just sitting there with whatever. But then most of your efforts should be aimed at looking inside. How you can find delight in developing, how you can find delight in letting go. What things, when you develop them, do give rise to delight. And how can you learn how to appreciate the well-being that comes as you follow the path? So it's not all about equanimity and acceptance. We're looking for the end of suffering. And that doesn't come simply by saying, well, I'll just be okay with whatever comes up. Some people define the word dukkha, translating as suffering, can also mean stress, but they translate it as unsatisfactoriness, as if the problem were, if we could learn how to simply be satisfied with things as they are, then we'd be okay. Again, that's not what the Buddha taught. He says you have to make changes. You have to develop skillful qualities, abandon unskillful ones. You don't just wait for the unskillful ones to die off on their own, because when they die off on their own, they come back. You have to understand them. You have to penetrate what is it about them that the mind likes that allows them to come back. And one cannot see that it's not worth it. Because we're not just sitting here passively watching things coming and going. Look at dependent core arising. All these things happening before sensory contact. Fabrication, intentions, attention, perceptions, feelings. We're actively shaping things. And that's what we're trying to train, the way the mind shapes its experience. And part of that is learning how to find joy in simple things like generosity and virtue, and moving up to finding joy in the concentration, joy in the fact that you're getting some control of your mind and you're beginning to see into your mind. There may be a lot of things you don't like to see, but it's better to see them than not to see them. If the things going on in the mind that are unskillful and you don't want to see them, okay, how are you going to get rid of them? It's when you admit that they're there that you can look into them. And you can take joy in the fact that you're understanding things that you used to hide from yourself. So delight is an important part of the practice. Learn how to cultivate it. Because that's what's going to allow your practice to last for a long time.